Good morning and welcome to Back Chat. I'm Hugh Chiverton, your co-host today, Mike Rouse. Mike, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hugh.
Today, not Disneyland and supermarket coupons. On Wednesday, the government decided not to extend an option for Disney to buy a 60-hectare site next to the park. Disney says it's extremely disappointed that the government has ended the option for it to buy the adjacent piece of land in Penny's Bay. So what should happen now to the site? Various proposals have come up, moving Ocean Park, building houses, sports facilities. What do you think? And are you happy with the state of Disneyland as it reopens? After 9.15, we're going to be joined by the Chief Executive of the Consumer Council to discuss discounts versus cash coupons and a lucky draw by the supermarket chains. Let us know your thoughts on either of these topics by leaving a message on our Facebook page. That's Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. By emailing us, backchat@rthk.hk, or by calling us. And our telephone number is 233 88266. You are very welcome. 233 88266 is the number. We're going to be talking in a moment for this first part of the programme on Disneyland to David Webb, chief editor of website.com, and Paul Zimmerman, CEO of Designing Hong Kong. Once again, if you want to comment, backchat@rthk.hk. Just before we get to today's topic, a few emails relating to discussions. Last week, David F. I have to apologise to David F. because he did send an email and I missed it. Just my apologies. There's nothing wrong with the email. This is what it says. This is from David F. A task force reviewing the local school curriculum is calling for a major overhaul of the liberal studies subject, including stripping out discussion of current affairs. The task force concluded that secondary students aren't mature enough to have a solid understanding of the problems from multiple perspectives, unquote, and appreciate all the complexities at hand. In contrast, secondary schools in the United Kingdom actively encourage discussion on current affairs, and young persons can join the army at the age of 16. Those at the age of 15 years and 7 months are considered mature enough to make an application to join the army. So whereas the 16-year-old worldly soldiers in the UK trained to protect Queen and country, their 16-year-old Hong Kong mollycoddled counterparts are considered by the task force to be incapable of discussing world affairs or making any positive contribution to society. I really fear for this generation of Hong Kong youth and their future. That's from David F. Larry says, I enjoyed the discussion on police and journalism last Thursday. Annie Healy-Fenton asked some very good questions as a real media pro. The two media studies universities academics sounded rather clueless. I agree with some of the listeners' comments about the shortcomings of the Hong Kong Journalists Association, which is unable to self-regulate, and sadly this does not bode well for the reputation of their industry. The discussions exposed the over-the-top bias of Tom Grundy and the cluelessness of Chris Young as to how the industry could regulate itself by preventing the bad elements, such as fake journalists, from hijacking the industry and turning it into a circus for teens. That is from Larry. And finally, Leslie Ann says in an email, please can you ask someone in government how many people actually go on to test positive within their 14-day quarantine period after testing negative at the airport? And if they do test positive, in which week is it, the first or second one? The reason I'm asking is that I suspect the numbers who subsequently turn positive are incredibly low, and I would assume it would be within the first week rather than the second. If this is indeed the case, the government could consider shortening the 14-day quarantine period to 7 days and then administer another COVID test end of day six, with the result being through on day seven. If the candidates are still negative after a week in their second test, they could be free to come out of quarantine. This would encourage travel enormously and in turn help the airline and tourist industries, which are badly in need of help. That comes from Leslie Ann. Thank you very much indeed for that. Backchat@rthk.hk. David Webb, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thank you for joining us once again. Good to talk to you. What do you think should happen to this site?
Well, I think you've got to look at it holistically. I don't think we need two theme parks in Hong Kong. It's debatable whether we even needed one. Original one is Ocean Park. If you close down the whole of Disneyland there, you free up not just the 60-hectare extension site, but 280 hectares in total. And if you were to develop that at a modest plot ratio of about 5, allowing for the fact that not all of it can be developed, you'd need roads and fire stations and police stations and so on, you'd still have about 150 million square feet. If you were to sell that in the open market, it would be worth about $5,000 per square foot gross of land premiums. That's $750 billion, which would be twice what we've just spent on the COVID schemes, and it would help to repay things like the Shenzhen Express Rail Link and the road bridge to Macau. And you'd have room for perhaps at 150 million square feet, not packing them in too densely, perhaps 500,000 people, which is far more than a population growth we expect in the next 20 years or so. It's growing very slowly now. And it's a flat piece of land. Ocean Park is a very mountainous site. It's got cable cars to deal with that and tunnels and so on. It's difficult to develop on its own. I would keep that and redevelop Disney. And they can buy back the Disneyland site based on its current usage, which is as a theme park. As a theme park, it loses money nearly every year, so the land isn't worth very much. They only paid for the reclamation cost, and that's roughly what they should get adjusted for inflation if we bought it back, which was a few billion Hong Kong dollars. So I would kick them all out. And you've got an MTR line already running there, so that's good. You don't have to build a new one. You've got mass transit already available. You could probably expand that a bit and put some bus lines in. That's what I would do with the Disney site. And then, you know, the whole question of public versus private and so on needs to be rethought. The government just needs to provide rental vouchers for those in Hong Kong who can't afford to rent a place, and then let the free market function on the ownership of the landlords of property. The government doesn't need to be their landlord as well, which causes all sorts of tensions and results in stupid things like no means testing after the age of 60 and no requirement to get out of a large unit when your children leave home and apply for their own units, which has resulted
in... Okay, David, we have to stop you before you solve all our problems.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mike?
Well, no, David, I think one of the options would be, okay, let's scrap the whole of Disneyland, I think is where you are.
Yeah.
There, but you would keep Ocean Park because it's more popular than Disneyland?
Well, I would only if it could be made viable, and that's another question. But, you know, there are arguments about economic externalities, that having a theme park helps to attract marginal numbers of extra tourists to Hong Kong who then spend money in the shops and restaurants as well. I've never been quite persuaded that that's the best use of our capital and our land. I think that's a sort of separate question to the one you're asking me now, which is what should we do about that big vacant site? And you see, if you keep Disneyland open, then they're going to whinge about only keeping low-rise developments so that people in the park don't lose the sort of suspension of reality when they go in, and they can't see tower blocks looming over them from the other side of the avenue. So it restricts what you can do with the vacant site unless you close down the first one.
When we looked at this strategically, and I'm sort of reaching more than 20 years.
We, the government.
Shall I just explain, sorry, for people who are not up to up to speed, that Mike was involved, you were the chief negotiator for the government, involved in the deal that was struck between the government and Disney.
I was the first commissioner for tourism in the middle of that.
And indeed, you know what's in the agreement that none of us have actually seen. It's still a secret agreement in terms of the royalties that Disney gets. And
I don't think it is. It went to Exco and LegCo in November 1999.
No, only selected extracts. They never disclosed the whole agreement. And I asked for it and was told it was commercially sensitive and I couldn't get it. And it never has been disclosed. They've leaked out various bits, but you know what you know in terms of the formula for royalties and creaming off of the top and management fees and so on. We only know part of that equation. Remember, of course, this wasn't tendered. We didn't invite all the theme park operators, Universal Studios, and whoever else might want to.
I'm glad you raised this, because one of the things that we did, as from the tourism perspective, was we identified that if people came to Hong Kong anyway, they might go to Ocean Park. But nobody came to Hong Kong in order to go to Ocean Park. It wasn't sufficiently outstanding. So it's a nice park.
Right.
I've been there. But it wasn't a tourist draw. Whereas something like a Disneyland, which has a name, which
what
has
makes
a brand
you think that's a tourist draw? I mean...
Sorry, you're applying 20 years of experience back, which we didn't have then. We looked at theme parks around the world, and of the top 10 at that time, Disney ran, I think, 8 or 9. So there was no question about who ran the most popular theme parks in the world. It wasn't a question. Universal, yes, is another famous brand, and whenever Disney said they were going to go to Shanghai or Singapore, we said, well, that's okay, we have a nice site in mind, we give it to Universal. But that was a bluff on both sides. They wanted to be in Hong Kong.
Yeah, but the point is we traditionally do these things by open tender. That was the same budget, by the way. It was Donald Zheng, the financial secretary then under Tung Chee Hwa.
Right.
It was the same budget in which they announced a no-tender development of what is now the Cyberport.
But if you're going
And you know, they didn't open that to bids either. So it was just a period when they thought...
I understand why you're aggrieved with Cyberport. And I perhaps share some of your grief. But when we were looking at
You're mentally wedded to a deal that you negotiated, but I'm just saying it's still...
That's a fair comment.
And you were known affectionately as Mickey Rouse at the time.
I was known as Mickey Mouse my whole life, actually.
We are now looking back and knowing that this thing didn't work out. It doesn't draw in that many additional tourists, and the ones it does draw in probably don't spend that much anyway. They're low-budget tourists. Is that the best use of our work, labour force and land supply in Hong Kong? You know, the argument of externalities is always applied with projects that aren't going to make money, like the bridge or whatever. And it usually falls flat on its face when you stand it up to scrutiny.
Can I step in? Can't we have both, though? Because this land is conveniently pretty much split in two, like an apple. And you have half of it for Disneyland and you have half of it for some other development.
Actually, it's about 200...
Which is what we're talking about this morning.
Yeah, the Disneyland half.
So you can both have what you want.
The Disneyland side is massive and it constrains what you can do with the other side because of their... Unless you forget that and say it's okay to have tower blocks.
It does constrain it. There are limitations. Paul Zimmerman, what's your reading on this?
Yeah, no, this is going to be,
what do you do with this site?
I think this is going to be a boring morning because I totally agree with David Webb on the opportunity of this site. We've got you're not going to change my mind on this one. We've got a good rail station there, and we've got a very good road infrastructure there. We've got proximity to the airport. This is a good piece of land to develop. And if the Disneyland, if you keep it to the current size, it's basically the world. It's the mini Disneyland around the world. It's not spectacular in that sense. It's a very small one. You're now not going to expand it. You have agreed on that already, and it has a restrictive governance on the development of the land next door to it. So if you want to get the best out of this site, then why not redevelop the entire area? And that demand that is there for a theme park type of activities can easily be catered for an ocean park. Now, I have an interest there. I'm the vice chairman of the Southern District Council. Ocean Park is part of our area, and we believe that we like to see jobs saved in the Southern District, and we like to see the Ocean Park survive and be enjoyed by people.
Why not move Ocean Park to the adjacent site at Disneyland and create a tourism hub?
Well, I mean, then you do not have the synergy effects that you can have with an ocean park. So the current idea is that Ocean Park is to open it up to kind of get rid of the toll gate at the station, but that you can enjoy the park as a whole and that you pay as you go for each of the different attractions. That would open it up more to integration with the rest of the district. So I think that we have a much better plan for Ocean Park coming up.
Well, it's never been viable.
It's just asking for more government money.
Yes.
And it keeps being closed. That's the other problem. But well, assuming we get past that, let's open.
Yeah, no, for now we have to make an assumption that there is a future for these kind of large public gathering facilities.
But when it had a water park as part of it, it didn't work. It was closed. And now apparently the saving grace is to build the water park again.
It's a very different water park, and it's going to be open up. It's going to be in a fantastic facility.
Very soon, isn't it? End of this year.
No, and it's going to be a fantastic facility that's going to be out there at Aberdeen Harbour. And so we're making an assumption. We're going to get past COVID. We're going to get back to an opportunity to hang out with each other and have fun in things like theme parks. And if even on that basis, you know, do we need two in Hong Kong? Or do we have enough with one? And then Ocean Park, as David has pointed out, is a very difficult to develop piece of land. It's a very,
oh,
very
I'm sorry. It's, we have bulldozers. It's a very easily developed piece of land.
Well, you could do it. You could sculpt it like mid-levels in terraced, you know, cut it away and do that. But
you could have three Taiku Shings on the site with room left.
Now we've got a fight between...
It's steeper.
Don't forget, this attracting tourist thing has slightly been diluted by the fact that our main tourism base is from the mainland, and they now have a much bigger Shanghai Disneyland to go to if they're that keen on Disney.
Well, in the south, they have Hengqin Island, which has... fabulous theme parks, including amazing water theme park, which if I were given a choice, I would go to rather than Ocean Park.
So you would close down both then? No. So you want to keep Disney because you were involved in it? And that's
I like Disney reason, very much. And I mean, as you mentioned, having Mickey Mouse as a name associates me with the park. I would move Ocean Park to the site next door.
How many times have you been to Disneyland?
All right. I was there last Friday. Okay. Also, I go once a month if I can.
All right. Also with us are Brian King, who's Associate Dean and Professor in the School of Hotel and Tourism Management at the Polytechnic University, and John App, Visiting Professor at the Institute for Tourism Studies in Macau, former Professor of Tourism at the Polytechnic University. Professor King, good morning to you. What do you think should happen to this site, first of all?
Well, I think what the site immediately adjacent to Disney needs to be compatible with how Disney is. I think that particular precinct is nicely landscaped, it's green, and it's quite tranquil. So I think that essence, and it's part of the non-intrusion principle that was part of the original proposal to Legislative Council. So I think that whatever goes there needs to be compatible. Now, that's probably going to be something recreational. I think it needs to serve the needs of the Hong Kong population as much as, and maybe more than the visitors. So, and then it needs to fit in with the overall appeal of Lantau.
Okay, so what sort of thing would work there? What sort of use?
Well, many things have been talked about for Lantau. We've heard about aviaries, we've heard about zoos, we've heard about other theme parks, we've heard about spa retreats, all kinds of concepts, but I don't think the government is really close to having the concept which is going to fit. So I think there's a long way to go with the discussions, and in the government's blueprint, they're talking about beyond 2022 resolving the uses of Lantau. So I think a holistic approach needs to be taken. Let's not jump to what should go there now.
Is there a long-term future for, or a medium-term future for tourism in Hong Kong? It's hard to see, isn't it?
Well, this is certainly a reality check. I mean, the original plan was to have, you know, a second or third theme park. That's clearly not going to happen. Both Disney and Ocean Park attracted last year about 5.7 million. And as Mike has said, Chimelong is already doing 11 million. So it's not just Hong Kong, it's not just Shanghai Disney, it's also Greater Bay Area. And also the Macau integrated resorts are coming on fast. So I think this is a reality check for Hong Kong. We need to rethink what the tourism appeal of the overall destination. We need to diversify. Now, Disney has got diversification happening. I believe that the current site potentially could handle 10 million visitors. So there seems to be adequate scope for expansion on the existing site without the second one. So the original aspiration hasn't been met, and certainly is unlikely to be for a long time.
So you haven't really come up with an idea for the second half. Here's one. Why don't we do something for the adults and build casinos on the other, the open piece of land there? Low-rise casinos won't interfere with the view from Disney. The adults can go, most of them, to the casino. One of them can go and look after the kids at Disneyland. And it's a win-win situation. You've got leisure all over the site then. You know, of course, I'm suggesting something that the central government wouldn't allow because they protect Macau with its casino monopoly. But assuming that they let that go, because Macau is now talking about opening a stock exchange, you know, and going into competition with Hong Kong, then why don't we open casinos and put them all on the Disneyland extension site?
We could make...
Well, this is part of the vision for Lantau, you know, not the casinos, I should stress. So it's about looking at competitive advantage as well as catering to the local community. And it's very evident that Macau is specializing in casinos. And then Hengqin Island has got huge plans as the Orlando of China. So
this but that's right next to Macau,
right?
Yeah.
Through about what's our vision for Lantau?
The Hengqin Island is right next to Macau, so they're combining theme parks and casinos. Why can't we?
Okay, well, let's call on John App now. say visiting for us at the Institute for Tourism Studies in Macau.
Being a bit mischievous here.
John, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us. All right, what do you think is what would you like to see done at this site? What do you think might actually realistically happen?
Well, I think we need to look in the context of, what is the overall strategy for, tourism in Hong Kong? And, certainly I concur with Professor King that you need to, set aside this area as a tourism hub. And I think that Hong Kong needs to be much more visionary in terms of the diversification of the tourism products that will be available. And certainly, yes, it's sad and somewhat disappointing that the original plan that Disney had to build a second park is not coming to fruition for a whole number of reasons. But Dave, I think we need to think carefully in terms of tourism infrastructure for Hong Kong. And if you look at the blueprint for tourism in Hong Kong, it doesn't tell me much and it doesn't give me much confidence. So my perspective, it lacks vision. In terms of whether you should want a casino there, I don't think the Penny's Bay site would be the best site. I would have concurred with James Tien back years ago when he suggested that Hong Kong should have a casino. If they had a casino, it should have been in the West Kowloon Cultural District to bring people in and to enliven things up. In addition, I think the Hong Kong government made a faux pas in not locating the international cruise terminal alongside the West Kowloon Cultural District. By having a casino and a international cruise terminal, you could have brought a lot of activity and life there. So that's my take on things. The thing about the debate, concerning the financial feasibility and profitability of our parks in Hong Kong, you unfortunately need to consider the externalities. So in terms of, what's the multiplier effect, et cetera, and do you regard having a theme park attraction as a part of your tourism infrastructure, where... Right, for the benefit of the public in terms of enhancing their quality of life and as well as providing an additional product for tourists to visit. These are the things that we need to consider. So, yes, you can look at purely financial terms, but is it going to meet other longer-term objectives?
Well, I think what John is saying is, in fact, very... similar to the thinking process from 20-odd years ago, that Hong Kong at that time had a tourism industry and wanted to grow its tourism industry. We were already a top choice for business travellers. We were a reasonably serious choice for adult visitors. What we were not was a first choice for family tourists. And the thinking at that time was that having a branded theme park of world-class standard would make us, for the first time, a first-choice destination for families throughout Southeast Asia and southern China. Hmm. So that, as I mentioned right at the outset, people who
But now
came
there are theme parks everywhere, right? So,
well, so yeah, the, well, yes, you're, what you're saying is it's time for an overall review of tourism as an industry in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Brian King, does it still hold true? Could we still, you know, make money as a destination for families?
Yes, I mean, I think the if Disney can get up to 10 million, for example, and that will depend on visitors coming through the infrastructure, then I think it has, you know, viability at that kind of level. As many others have said, it is the smallest Disney park worldwide, so that creates some challenges. It's kind of a boutique scale. I think that's okay for Hong Kong. I think Hong Kong should not try to replicate what Hengqin Island has got. I mean, they're planning 100,000 rooms there. They're planning three new theme parks. So the scale is vast. I think the vision has to be maybe more modest for tourism in Hong Kong, fitting within the wider range of industries that we've got.
Okay. Well, what do you think? Drop us a line, bankchat@rthk.hk. We say goodbye to the moment. Thank you very much indeed to Professor Brian King from the Polytechnic University, and John App, former professor there and now visiting professor at the Institute for Tourism Studies in Macau. Later, we're also going to be talking about the what to do with the supermarkets and the supermarket vouchers with the chief executive of the Consumer Council. Once again, we want to hear from you. The weather, mainly cloudy with a few showers, maximum temperature about 29 degrees today with some isolated thunderstorms around later. And the outlook, occasional showers in the next couple of days. 27 degrees at the moment and the relative humidity is at 83%. Welcome back to Bank Chat on a Monday morning of this short week with Mike Rouse and me, Hugh Chiverton. We're talking about what to do with the site next to Disneyland. There was an option for Disney to develop it, and that's now lapsing. So we've got a bit of prime land, flat prime land next to an MTR. What should be done on it? There are certain restrictions, it seems. We're mulling it over this morning with Paul Zimmerman, CEO of Designing Hong Kong, and David Webb, Chief Editor of website.com. Later, we're also going to be talking about the controversy over the supermarkets. The supermarkets who have been enjoying a subsidy for keeping on staff, even though they haven't been suffering under COVID, have now said that they'll return some of the benefit in the form of vouchers, but they will be made available through a lucky draw. And Gilly Wong for Wong, the chief executive of the Consumer Council, is not happy about that. Your thoughts on all the topics, of course. Welcome, bankchat@rthk.hk, our Facebook page, Bankchat and RTHK Radio 3, our telephone number 233-88266. David is particularly upset by this. David says, close down Disneyland, and the majority of Hong Kong people don't go there because it's too expensive to take your kids and the neighbours' kids, especially when the food is expensive. And is it fair to let Hong Kong people pay for a white elephant? As regards to housing, do we need to feed the construction industry anymore, particularly in that region? We want fresh air. Maybe David knows how many vacant flats there are in Hong Kong. That would sort out the housing situation. Also says, forget tourism. Let's have the budget respent on vitalising the manufacturing industry. Then business tourists with real money will come. And his final suggestion, we need another shopping centre the size of Sha Tin, full of electronic components, just like they have in China. Then we can get on and be productive in Hong Kong on the electronic and technology scene. And Din says, totally agree with David and Paul that we should out Disneyland and develop the whole site and cancel the ludicrous Lantau reclamation plan. Ocean Park can be expanded by giving them the adjacent police college site. The police college can be relocated to the Sekong or any other former British Army camp with the blessing of the PLA. That's a suggestion from Din. Once again, bankchat@rthk.hk. David Webb, it's quite fun to sort of play this. You know, we can move this here.
Lots of creative ideas, yeah.
I know, and things like this. But it's very expensive, and to be honest, it's not really going to happen. And the point about Disneyland is, to be honest, if you close Disneyland, that would send a very, very bad message to the world, wouldn't it?
It would say that we recognise our failures and we move on. Right? We recognise after 20 years...
They've never closed anywhere.
Lai Chi Kok Amusement Park closed on its own.
Disney,
it was private,
Disney
believe,
is never... Disney hasn't closed.
Yet, but there's always a first, right? You don't have to... Disney is not some immortal corporation that you have to respect, honour, and, you know, it's not something that deserves a free ride. You know, it doesn't deserve a free ride. So and it didn't in the first place. It didn't have to compete for that site. It paid nothing, basically, except the cost of sand in the water. And don't forget that this is not just a Disney park. It's 57% owned by the Hong Kong government. So they are the majority shareholder.
Yes, no, that's a very valid point. It's actually now 52-48, I think. But, it was 57-43 at the beginning.
No, that's right, because and we converted our debt into equity when it became clear we weren't going to be paid back.
And the option, by the way, did not belong to Disney. The option belonged to the joint venture company.
Yep.
Of which the Hong Kong SAR government is the majority shareholder.
So they've decided as the majority not to exercise the option that they had?
I don't think they've actually decided that either. What? Actually, under the agreement, some of the details of which are still
confidential.
With me after 20 years. I've forgotten many
of
them.
Go on, do tell.
The option exercisable was conditional on certain performance measures.
Well, it was described as 5 years automatic option, which is very strange because either it's extended or it isn't.
I'm not defending the decision of last week. I'm not sure it was a decision. The fact is that the performance measures were not achieved.
Yeah.
And therefore the option.
I think that was for the second 5 year option. So there were 2 5 year options, one of which was described as being automatic, which was strange because it sounds like a 25 year option.
If it's automatic, it's not an option.
Yeah.
Yes.
But then the second one was performance linked. Are they both performance linked? I don't know, because it's never been published. Anyway, for whatever reason, the government now says that's that, and Disney isn't quibbling over the fact that they can do that. They're not threatening to litigate.
They're not happy about it, though.
This sort of issue is covered in the shareholders' agreement,
which we've never seen either. But presumably they don't want to make trouble with the mainland and Shanghai. So if the Hong Kong government says the option is now going to expire, shut up, they will do so. Otherwise, they'll be in trouble up north.
And I'm not sure, if you're going to ask the public in Hong Kong whether they're happy or they're unhappy. I mean, it's been very, very clear that the public in Hong Kong really doesn't want cheap tourism bouncing around the city, pushing them out from the enjoyment of the city. And I think this COVID has changed the locals' perception of the city. So everybody's now onto this staycation. Everybody's running around staying in hotels throughout the city, and they're rediscovering and enjoying the city. So wherever you go now, you find little pop-up restaurants appearing.
And the Disney hotels are very full because they're so popular for staycations.
Well, and so is the Hyatt Hotel in the North Point Ferry Pier. So is the Overlook Hotel in Wong Chuk Hang. And so is, you can pick any hotel that has some character in some part of the city, and people are enjoying it, and people are then started to rediscover and enjoy the surroundings. They then start spending the money, and they start, and there, these, and these little
one,
bubbles
one
and little centers
ask
become
you, Paul, one of
popular.
The, one of the listeners emailed and said that you talked about cheap tourism, but one of the listeners called in about how expensive it was. So I think we need to be clear. Is Hong Kong Disneyland cheap tourism or is it expensive tourism?
For a local person to go and spend a day and a weekend to go and spend his money, it is expensive. For somebody who travels from overseas to come over from across the boundary to make a specific visit, it may not be that expensive.
In other words,
because
you tend
coming
to spend
over
more when you're on holiday.
Then you're on your Saturday and your
the
Sunday.
The government's argument has always been, of course, that there are a lot of people employed in tourism in Hong Kong. Checking the figures here, the last one I've seen is 6.6% of the workforce are involved in tourism.
There are, but it's hardly climbing up.
It's also true that a lot of those people are less skilled people as well, and it opens all kinds of opportunities for
opens all kinds of questions as to why we have so many low skilled people and why don't we educate them better?
Because you'll always have less skilled people,
right? Is the objective to maintain low standards of education and have lots of unskilled jobs, or to move up the value chain?
No, the objective is to accept the reality that there will always be lower skilled people.
There will always be some,
and they will always need a job.
Yes. Yeah, or welfare to support them. Because, as things get more automated, for example, self-service checkouts, you need fewer people in supermarkets to supervise that. If you look at the UK, The cost of labour in supermarkets is much higher because of their higher minimum wage, and there are much more self-service checkouts than you get in Hong Kong. If you look in the parks in Hong Kong, they're nearly all swept manually with brushes, because if we didn't have those people doing that, they would be on welfare anyway, probably. So we don't automate that with machines that could do it five times faster. Whereas,
and Mickey Mouse is not automatic either.
I don't follow you.
He's not automated. Therefore, that job will always be done.
Oh, you mean Disneyland?
By a human being.
Well, yeah. Disneyland can be to some extent automated. But the point is you know, you shouldn't try to micromanage the economy and centrally plan it like the mainland does and had tried for many, many years, and assume the government knows best how we should allocate land. All the creative ideas we've heard this morning about what to do with the site from listeners indicate that one clear thing is that we should let the market decide based on how much they're willing to pay for bits of land as to what the land should be used for, not have the government say this must be a budget hotel and this must be a data center and so on, which ends up with a suboptimal use of land where the government's decided that we should be in a particular sector. That's one of the problems. Look at Kai Tak site. Rather than just have open auctions without restriction on use, other than industrial, say, they've said, no, that must be a budget hotel here and there. And that means that they are allocating land for a suboptimal purpose, in this instance, to attract low-budget tourists to Hong Kong, rather than making us a premium destination for high-end shopping and other things where you might have fewer overall tourists in number spending more each, and overall benefit to the economy. That's central planning for you.
Okay. My suggestion, creative suggestion for what it's worth, is for an area for old people, an old people's town.
Hmm.
You could do it low-rise, and you can have medical facilities there, and you can have retail and things like this, and you can have a very nice environment and for people like us.
And for as long as they can walk, they can cross the road into Hong Kong
flat,
Disneyland.
And it's connected.
And put them on the roller coaster.
Best for commuting, but that's fine. Because
it's much cheaper for senior citizens.
Well, it's
David in the not.
Yeah. And you keep them in Hong Kong.
Well, I mean, basically, it's Discovery Bay. I mean,
for old people.
Yeah, no, but I mean,
but the government will subsidize your ferry fares almost entirely. You only pay $2 instead of $40.
But Penny's Bay would be, if it, and when you develop it for residential, it would be similar to a Discovery Bay. It is an enclave. It is well connected, and even better than Discovery Bay in this case because it has an MTR line. But it is an enclave, and it is somewhat a step away from the core center. So it will attract young families with kids that can bicycle around, and they don't have to worry about cars, and it will attract elderly people who like to walk quietly and be in a pleasantly designed environment. Better than Discovery Bay, you could ensure that the welfare and health facilities are strengthened so that you basically attract some more elderly people. I mean, Penny's Bay will be a fantastic opportunity and reduce the reliance on the need for doing additional reclamation.
Okay. Some suggestions. Richard II in an email says, "Our house is on fire. Our ecology is collapsing. People are significantly changing their patterns of behaviour and values as a result of COVID. And you want to go back to a situation that's largely contributed to all this. Hello?" That comes from Richard II. Alan says, "I've lived in Hong Kong since about 1990. Never visited Disneyland. Too expensive for me. I don't have any great ideas about the adjacent land, except don't give it to Disney.
Hmm.
I know that casino is a terrible idea. Casinos equals crime and corruption. It's universal law. Even without law-breaking, there's terrible corruption of society. The promoters play up glamour, foreign millionaires dropping bundles. The reality is local working-class people in droves pushing their salaries into poker machines. 99% that the government will make it into some disco bay stroke cyberport style development, expensive flats for sale to the upper crust and speculators with the pretext of tourism, technology, whatever, that never amounts to anything." That is from Alan.
Well, you don't have to do that. I mean, you don't have to set a theme for it. I mean, it could be, as Discovery Bay, it could be a great living environment, but you would have to put in a percentage of public housing
and
not just make it all private housing.
I mean, that was the plan, obviously, for...
Or provide public rental vouchers, okay, so people can...
or
yeah, indeed. Research. All right. S says, Mike, for Disney, even when it was being discussed 20 years ago, I thought it was a goofy idea, especially when the government had to pay for all the infrastructure and bear continuous losses. If Disney was a world-class feature then, why did it not pay for its own costs? That is from S. LK says, even if the site is vacated, what assurance would we have that the government would actually release the site to the market? Their usual strategy is to hoard land until it reaches some ludicrously high reserve price, ensuring that the only viable property to build is luxury property. That's from LK. Jay says, because of labour restrictions, you can't hire people casually, easily. Max L says, it's been a very entertaining back chat episode this morning, but it wasn't a fair fight. David and Paul were armed and ready, the other participants less so. Next time I suggest you find someone who's capable of taking the other side of the argument, and in this case, there may not be another side.
Well, John Epp and Brian King are always armed to call for more tourist facilities.
Yes, okay. It's just a very difficult thing to argue for.
Max says, style points to Mike Rouse for maintaining his sense of humour and not rising to David's baiting. That's from Max. Thank you very much indeed for that. A couple more comments. Colin says, thanks to Big Ears, Mickey Mouse and Humpty Dumpty for entertaining us this morning. Please leave it to Alice in Wonderland to sort things out on Fantasy Island. That's from Colin. And John says, the land should be used as a mausoleum for Mickey Rouse and his colonial crones to remind future generations of policy misadventures. That is from John. Thank you very much indeed for that.
But NLK, he is right, of course. There is no guarantee that the government is going to move on getting the land out in the market under the current circumstances. You'll see that they're holding back on land resources until there's more
Well, they're going to expand the quarantine camp at the moment. So, you know, until they're absolutely sure they won't need it, they're going to keep expanding that.
And that is another constraint. But they definitely have no intention at the moment to really push land sales very hard as the markets are softening quickly.
Okay. Well, thank you both very much indeed for joining us. Thank you for all the emails and comments as well this morning. David Webb, I think you wanted to stay on to
if I may.
Please do. Your thoughts welcome on the second topic today we wanted to cover in the remaining 11 minutes or so of the program. The government said yesterday that the two leading supermarket chains, Park and Shop and Welcome, must be more transparent over how they use their part of the government wage subsidies to help the needy. Joining us for comment now is Gilly Wong, Chief Executive of the Consumer Council. Ms. Wong, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Okay, this is an email from Jay, who says, supermarkets are a disgrace to the public. They should be fined if they abuse the government handouts. The public want the prices of food reduced, not to be put up or down on discounts. We, the public, are not stupid. And as for a raffle and coupons, this does absolutely nothing for the in-betweeners in Hong Kong who don't receive anything. It's probably the wealthy who spend more money and get more coupons and better chance of winning the raffles. That comes from Jay. I think the supermarkets would say, well, we haven't abused the government handouts. We were given this opportunity and we took advantage of it in just according to the rules, and now suddenly everyone's dumping on us. Do you feel any sympathy for them?
Well, frankly, you know, Hugh, your voice is very low when I hear from the phone, but I try to guess, you know, what exactly the question is. I think, you know, for a large corporation like the supermarket chain, under this kind of economic climate, especially we are facing the pandemic, people are expecting the different organizations will exercise their corporate social responsibility to do more to support the public right now, especially those underprivileged and also those even middle class, you know, they are also really tight in their wallet. because some of them, you know, has lose their job or maybe suspend their job. So without any income or less income, everyone, you know, the spending power will be lesser than before. So what we expect is, apart from the job protection scheme, that the extra money that the supermarket can get and then that reimburse or maybe support the public, you know, making use of the subsidy, you know, that they receive, we would expect, you know, the supermarket can do more to support the public by offering more discount and also cutting the price, you know, from the overall bill as far as possible. That's, you know, the most easy and most feasible way, you know, to help.
Gilly, I'm completely baffled by this. The whole scheme was designed to help companies that were hard hit by the pandemic, who are more likely to let go of staff, to encourage them to retain those staff. Now, whatever the merits of that, and the supermarkets are not hard hit by the pandemic. So I simply can't understand why they're getting this money at all.
Yeah,
so the issue of
because that's the government scheme. I mean, it's their scheme, their rules. Okay, as I wrote in April, I predicted this, all right? I said the supermarkets are going to do very well out of this. But and any employer should claim, because otherwise they're not serving their shareholders right. Okay, it's a crazy way to give back reserves. They should have just given money to people who had been forced out of work because restaurants were closed, gyms were closed, or whatever. A furlough scheme, in other words, that the UK government did. But instead, they paid companies without question. Half of the salaries, up to 9,000 per month, total salary 18,000, for 6 months. I'm an employer of one person. I claimed, okay, I've got my $54,000. I'm not being told to give out vouchers to anyone. And if you're going to have such a crazy scheme, all right, then why subsequently use it for political purposes by hitting on two big supermarket chains? Now, we know anecdotally that they seem to have rather large market shares, and you have as a consumer council have argued for a competition law, which we've now got, and perhaps that could be looked at by the Competition Commission as to whether in fact they are dominating or abusing their dominant position. But you can't then subsequently apply new rules and pick on two companies individually, which the government is doing, and not, say, pick on the China Resources supermarket chain controlled by the mainland government. They have outlets here. What about Fortress, right, Electronics, IKEA? Why don't you go after all the other retailers and demand that they hand out vouchers? And if you do, then aren't you going to say that you're by forcing them to lower their prices, they're undercutting the small retailers who should be helped?
All right, Gilly Wong?
Well, I think there are a lot of voices already, you know, in the past about why the supermarket applied for this subsidy scheme, because as you rightly point out,
because they
their
should.
Business has gone up rather than gone down.
If there are no conditions on it, then you apply. You apply.
Yeah, first of all, fundamentally, and many people question about why did they apply. First of all, the government job subsidy scheme, the whole thing, you know, is try to help the public as far as possible. So they don't want to make a very complicated rule.
It's the most inept scheme ever designed as a means of trying to protect the unemployed. It's the worst scheme I've ever seen. And the government now realises this and is now trying to cover its arse, basically, by imposing additional demands, but picking on two companies that it knows will be populist in its approach, and not picking on any other retailer of food, which has done just as well during the crisis, or any other retailer of electronics or sofas. I mean, you can't, as a government, pick winners or losers in this way by penalising people for applying for their entitlements under a crazy scheme.
Gilly Wong, they're not charities. They're not public facilities. They are companies who are making legitimate
work. Well, no one would say, you know, you shouldn't make any profit because you're a business. But when we look at, because what we zoom into what they're doing right now, there are a lot of ambiguities, and also there are, even when you announce, you know, certain scheme, it may not be at the benefit of the public. So that's why we can continue to criticize on the past, but right now, at this moment, we are having some announced scheme from the two supermarkets.
Yeah. But they're not there to be welfare agencies. The government is there to do that. If poor people can't afford food, it's the government's job to make sure that they can by giving them more money. It's not the supermarket's job to try and adjust their prices and then have a special price for people on welfare or something. That's...
Well, depends, because when we look at the same chains having global business, when they're in another market, they're offering 6 months discount to that market by reducing almost, you know, on average 20% of the prices of their products. So it doesn't mean that, you know, from a supermarket standpoint, you know, it cannot be done in our market. It may not be the same level of discount, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you can offer better discount. Especially when we are talking about, when we keep on monitoring the price from the supermarket, in the past few months, all the major popular items that people purchase frequently, for example, rice, instant noodles, candied foods, and infant formula, etc., the offer that we enjoyed in the past, you know, almost all has gone. And also some of the certain products...
They're priced in a competitive market. Well.
Hang on.
It depends.
Some emails. KLC says, those luckily hit the jackpots in the lucky draw may not need this peanut monetary help, while those those losing out may need this small sum earnestly. This luck draw is a bad approach for returning the government COVID money back, not even-handed. Here's one from Colin, who says there is one simple solution. Park and Shop and Welcome should give the government handouts back to the Hong Kong government. Yeah. It's a disgrace they even claimed the government handout in the first place. That comes from Colin. Gilly Wong, as I understand it, so 90% of the rebates will be given back in cash and meal coupons. A lot of this will go for Park and Shop. Half of the, like $81 million will come as meal vouchers to underprivileged groups, and about 40% will be given as cash coupons through a lucky draw, and 10% given to frontline staff. So that, you know, they can argue that they are sharing out the money. Some of it will go to underprivileged groups. Some will go as cash coupons for the general public to take a chance, because they're distributing 32 million people among everybody in Hong Kong. That seems a reasonable way to do it, doesn't it? They're sharing it out.
Well, those are taxpayer money. The money, you know, that they're giving out is taxpayer money.
That's... Yes, but they're giving it to every employer in Hong Kong without any rules. And why should they now subsequently say that two particular companies can't have it or must have it only on certain conditions?
Well,
isn't that basically imposing a higher...
Whether the government requesting the two supermarkets to do so is right or wrong, but fundamentally,
that's the issue here.
By itself is fair to different industries, because if you are picking on different industries...
What about other food retailers?
Who is making money, who is not making money, you know, the whole subsidy
it's not
scheme
means tested.
Will not be fast enough to support the public. But what we are seeing right now at this moment, since, you know, the current state is they apply for the subsidy scheme, they get the money, and the government requests for it, and they accept this condition to apply for
it. It's a request,
you know, but it doesn't matter, you know, they get the money already. And right now, you know, they have announced, you know, the scheme that they decide to do. So we are at the moment to comment on what those schemes, you know, whether it's helpful to the public, and also what are the details, you know, that we should ask for to increase the transparency of the scheme. Don't forget about one thing is, we would trust that, you know, no matter what are the schemes, you know, that are presenting to the public right now, it's trying to help. You know, we believe, you know, in this good intention, but it doesn't mean that, you know, all these schemes are perfect. There are many areas
what would you suggest?
Not transparent enough, you know, for people to understand, and that's why, you know, we can't support.
What would you do with the scheme, Gilly Wong? How would you give the money back?
Well, for example, you know, but what I would like to do is to comment on the current, you know, scheme, you know, mm-hmm. they're having. For example, Lucky Draw, I have no objection about the Lucky Draw, but what we have to remind the Lucky Draw is it is not something people would perceive as a direct way to support the people to offload their financial pressure. This is, you know, probably people perceive it as trying your luck, you know, kind of promotion. So, but one thing, you know, that we want to remind the supermarket chain is, first of all, you know, every time when we have a mega lucky draw, we observe in the past, learn from the past, that there are certain lucky draws, you know, the system is not really well designed, that create a lot of hassles to the public to participate. We don't want to turn a happy game to become a hassle to the public. So that's a reminder to the supermarket chain. And secondly, it's about the privacy. The Privacy Commission has already released a statement reminding the supermarket chain to make sure that they comply with the privacy ordinance. And thirdly, this is from the consumer protection point of view. It's very important about the elderly protection because they are, the elderly will be probably interested in winning this kind of cash voucher from the supermarket. But on the other hand, they may not be very good at registering on the web. So they may ask some other people to help them. We don't want to have unscrupulous people take advantage of this moment to abuse the elderly in acquiring their privacy data, personal data. So this is one more reminder, you know, we want to put forward to the public. Furthermore, think about, you know, the other announced scheme, which right now the government has already said that it will not be part of the scheme. It's about 300 different products that will have price frozen. What we believe is that requires more transparency about what kind of products that are presenting for having the price being frozen, how popular they are, whether it is a house brand or other brands, and how people can easily assess, you know, what are the 300 items that you're talking about, the current price point, and also what kind of price level that you are referring to when you freeze the price. These are the more details that, you know, the public will deserve, you know, to know more about.
Aren't you concerned if they freeze prices, they won't pass through any savings they make when, you know, vegetables go down in price, for example? If you freeze it, it works both ways.
Okay, we're out of time. We'll leave that for the moment. I'm sorry, we're completely out of time. Gilly, one thing very much.
It highly depends on, you know, how you calculate the average the price point. You know that you want to freeze it.
Okay, Gilly, one. Thank you very much indeed for joining us, Chief Executive of the Consumer Council. And many thanks to David Webb there. Martin in an email says, "I for once have to agree with David Webb. Close Disney and develop it into housing. 20 years of losses have proven that it's a failure. By converting Disney into housing, it will make the Eastland Town Metropolis unnecessary. As for the commercial agreement with Disney, the timing couldn't be better. The US is stepping up its trade war and sanctions against China and Chinese companies, including Hong Kong, trying to completely decouple. Under this circumstance, why not decouple from Disneyland? If China would run a theme park in the US, Trump would have declared it a national security threat a long time ago." That is from Martin. And S says, "If Disney is allowed to stay in the areas around it, allowed to develop, will Disney be allowed to have the fireworks show every evening, which will contribute to noise and air pollution?" Nig says, "I question Mike Rouse's eligibility to even participate in this discussion when he won't wear a mask at the height of the pandemic." Not sure but the logic there. Anyway, Andrew says, "Why not build something for the Hong Kong people and not tourists? Some sports and natural park with, for example, dedicated mountain biking routes in the hills nearby, with a sailing and water sports centre, and perhaps some kind of environmental animal park and petting zoo built to world-class standards to teach local kids on all the wonderful benefits of engagement with animals and nature." That's Andrew's suggestion. Thank you very much indeed for that. Thank you to all our guests. Mike, thank you very much indeed for joining us once again.
Yes, I can't escape from Mickey Mouse.
No, it'll be with you till the end. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. The weather just before we go, mainly cloudy with a few showers, maximum temperature about 29 degrees, moderate to fresh easterly winds, and the outlook occasional showers in the next couple of days too. 27 degrees at the moment and a relative humidity now of 83%.